Greetings, family, and it is so nice to be here today. I'm not even going to start explaining how getting here, right here, was so important to me. And anyhow, I'm glad I'm here right now today and not canceling or not doing those things that I like that I'm stayed long enough to catch on to this program. Because just give you a general story about me in general. My story is I was born in England. My parents are Jamaicans. I was born in Bristol. We stayed there till I was five. I have at that time, I think it was three or four brothers, but we came to the US to have the land of the dream, from England. As again, I have to say, we're Jamaicans, so a lot of it was music and festivities, and I'm the only girl. Me and my mom rather, she didn't know, as I know now, she didn't have it to give, but she did teach me manners. She taught me, etiquettes, great etiquettes and morals. She told me how to say please. She taught me a lot, how to clean, how to, clean myself, and what's needed, and she was also the one who wore the pants in the house, even though my father was here. But as I know now, she was just that person, right? And so who I was never going to be like, because I just wasn't, right? Anyway, so long story even shorter. We moved to this place called Springfield, Massachusetts. After from New York to Springfield, and we stayed there, and I was in the best schools. Just regular schools were good back then. It wasn't a special school or anything, and by the way, in England, they taught me my knife and fork, the tea, how to hold the tea in the cup, and I was like, what, 4 years old, and so just stuff like that. And I remember a lot of that stuff because it was very impactful on my life, which is in a good way. So when we came here, it was like, as I know now, we were thrown into a war zone, but we didn't know it then. And so, I started learning, and in our family, it was like, all right, we're in America. I don't want no black people in my house, and blah 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 blah. And they had a way of not trusting Americans, especially black Americans. And it was like, me and my brothers looking like, well, aren't we going to school with them? Like, what are we going to do about that? So anyhow, so and I was the brave one out of all my brothers, and they tell me that now. So we just never, my mother and father divorced when I was 12, 13. And after he left, my mother was just like, especially to me, because I never seen my mother spank my brothers, but she tore my behind up all the time. And she always reminded me she didn't want me. And so I I started, my mother also had, she was a midwife in England. She came here, she was an RN, and on the weekends we lived across the street. We had our own house upstairs and downstairs, and she kept the downstairs empty, and we lived upstairs, and we were across the street from the Jamaican West Indian Club. So when they closed down, everybody came to my mother's house. She had the food cooked. She would pay them. I mean, they would pay her. She was the DJ. Her DJ name was Speedy, and she knew how to be on them turntables, boy. So anyhow, 12 years old, they got a divorce. I was, my mother said, you know, at 14, she said, you know, you keep leaving my iron on. I'm the only one paying the bill here. If I come home from work and my iron is on, you got to go. And so I was in school and I just had a panic attack and the teacher came over and she said, "What's? Are you okay? What's wrong?" And I was like, "Oh, nothing." And like, she wouldn't understand anyway, right? So I get home. My mother said, "You already know what I said. So when I get home tomorrow, you got to be out of here." And I took her for it and I left. And I, and by, and 79, when I left out in those days, you know, and they taught us to only have one friend. And that one friend that I picked was my next door neighbor, Cookie, who is the mother now of two of my elder nephews, 45 and 47. But so they didn't, you know, they didn't, it wasn't a crowd. So I've always had one friend at a time. But these one friends at a time, their mother took me in their home, took care of me as if I was their own. And I got more mothers than the law would allow that nurtured me and loved me to who I am today, a part of who I am today. Then, you know, it was fun, the drinking, we had races and da-da-da. And then I had this attitude, right? This demeanor, like, I'm going to show her. I'm not going to be all that she said I'm going to be. So what I was, what I became was a geographical drunk. So I, you know, I didn't want anybody to see me that way. So I had enough, whatever it was, to be jumping from state to state, you know. And then I was like, and those, that time AA was, I didn't hear a thing about AA. I used to go to the emergency room. They would put me in a room. They would say, okay, stay in there. And next thing you know, I'm sleeping. And then by that time they come wake me up and tell me, okay, you can go now. And I'm like, ah. You know, so I just, I was always seeking. I knew it was something because I always had this imaginary friend who now I know was God, because I had to play with myself because I had so many brothers. And so I found out real early on in the bathroom, nobody disturbs you. So I would go in there and, you know, I had all these, you know, back then it was like, what do you want to be when you grow? I want to be Cinderella. I want to be a doctor, not a doctor. I always wanted to be a police officer or a detective, you know, because I always caught my brothers and stuff. But anyway, and so I, you know, I had aspirations about what I wanted to be in life, a movie star, model, you know, they had beauty pageants spend that back then on TVs and stuff. And I did, by the grace of God, fulfill some of those dreams, right? So anyway, I got on, you know, this geographical state to state, you know, and that's how I ended up here in Georgia. And mind you, I thought it was cool and stuff like that, that I, you know, can just spot. They call them squatters now. Now they call them squatters. But, you know, people invite, come on, you can stay a week or whatever. And it was cool. We was hitchhikers back then, you know, everything. You didn't get no crazy hitchhiker. We had truck drivers going to Pennsylvania. You know, we was just hitchhikers. And it was cool. And so then I got to Georgia and I got here in 1989 of Good Friday. And how I got here, my mother had moved here and I found out about it. And someone in, you know, Connecticut said, I tell you what, I'll give you $1,000 and a bus ticket one way to anywhere you want to go. So I found out her number because we didn't have cell phones then. And I called her and I was like, hey, mom, because I knew she liked money. I said, I got $1,000. You know, you think I can come stay with you? And she was like, yeah. And I promise you, my last $10 I had, we was at a place to eat. And I owed, and she, you know, I was treating her, you know, because I'm close to my mom now. I always desired for my mother's love, you know, and always. And so they said, oh, you know, I said, mom, I need 34 cents. And she was like, well, make sure you give me my 34 cents when we get home. And I looked at her like, you know, and then anyway, I got kicked out of there after she somehow got me out of her house. And so I became homeless in these streets in Georgia. I was in bando buildings in the woods, and you know, and I was such a nerd because I saw pecan trees on one of the wildest streets, you know, in Georgia. I saw pecan trees. I was like, boy, you never have to go hungry here. You know, I would sit around and eat pecans or whatever. So anyway, I became, something happened with my, you know, in the streets and going back and forth. And the CDC people picked me up and they say, we'll bring you back. I'm like, you sure? They're, yeah. And so they did. They gave me my shot. And they were like, oh, you know, you're 4 months pregnant. And I'm like, I am, you know, like, oh. Anyway, so I go to back out. They dropped me back off and I just became homeless. And one day I was walking because I always talked with this kind, this imaginary spirit that I know now it was God. It said to me, the baby or the street life, choose. And there I went to this lady's home that invited me, who I thought was going to be a man when I walked up to the car. It was a lady. She said, oh, I don't mean to bother you, but there's that house down here if you ever want to sleep. And I came down there and I knocked on her door and I said to her, you know, can I still come in and have sleep? And she said, yeah. I slept for 3 days straight. I got up and I walked down to the treatment center that I knew was on a corner and I came in. So, but when I came into the program, I was listening to the read that I hear, but every time I read it, it always like just talks about me, you know. I was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know. Thank God I wasn't a violent drunk. That's just for me. But I was a loner as well, so that wasn't good either. And so I would, you know, I would go into the woods and sit there and drink and have a good time and talk to the birds. And I thought that was cool. And then I had convinced myself that, you know, what kind of spirit, you know, maybe this is what you sent me here to do. Because every time I get around people, I would speak about the higher power. But they would look at me like, lady, if you don't shut up, you know. So anyway, I came into the room. And, you know, I realized that, you know, now I realize that. But they knew it before I did, that I was defensive, defiant. I looked at that big book and I was like, oh, y'all want me to read this? I just came here to stop drinking. I didn't come in here to read no big book. I couldn't even spell the word the, you know, and I'm a pretty smart girl, but I couldn't. And the word whole meaning W-H-O-L-E. And I couldn't even put that together in my brain. And you want me to read a big book? I was like, oh, no, I'm not doing that. You know, so they were like, oh, just keep coming back. And then here at that time, they would pick you up, you know, bring you. These ladies were really good for me. And then I came in here. I was defiant, defensive, paranoid, because if you looked at me too long, I was thinking you was, you know. And they told me I was one of those people that, you know, I'm at home. I forgot the name of that. I'm at home, you know, getting a little 30 days, you know, and I'm at I stayed in treatment a whole year. So, but anyway, I'm home at the beginning trying to put on clothes, wondering if you're gonna like what color I have on, you know. So I would change 100 shirts before I get to the meeting. Then when I got to the meeting, you know, sitting in the back, they didn't do that here, thank God. They were like, all the newcomers, they saved the seats up front. Come up front, sit down up in the front, all the newcomers in the front. That was just like a mandatory meet the way I was going to meetings. And then they would tell, you know, just take it easy, you know, give yourself a break. They would tell me to, you know, you're going to get those thoughts. Just tell the thoughts to thank you for sharing. And you know, just say the serenity prayer, because that's all I could do. That's all I could do in my first year was that's all I could do. You know, it was like I couldn't do much, you know, as far as but that. And that was enough, you know. And so, you know, and I had that attitude of trying to relinquish everything I thought I lost, you know? So I would go backwards and then I come frontwards and I, you know, I'm trying to still say, oh, I missed something, you know, I because of my drinking. So let me go back. And they told me to stay away from them old playmates, old playgrounds, because of course, like I said, I was always trying to save lives when I was drinking. So I wanted to go back around there and let them know, hey, y'all, I found the way, you know, come on this way, you know, but, you know, they were like, you can't do that, you know, and so I learned very quickly that, and then, and the more I stayed, the more I started seeing people coming in that I knew, you know, just a few though, not many, and they, but however, the more I'm staying here, you know, admitting I was powerless was what I did, right? You know, and I was blessed enough to have a village in Atlanta, women with children, and I was there. I had the little boy. Like I said, I was pregnant. I had 2 months. I had him. I went to treatment, and in 2 months when I had him at 9 months, I must have ate up the whole treatment center. And the baby came out 9 pounds without a trace of, because of course I was doing all the alcohol's cousin stuff. So, but he came out with no trace of any drug in his body. So I knew that was my higher power, because people used to say, yeah, you need to stop doing walking up and down these deals, blah, 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 blah. And so I'm like, nah, my baby's gonna be fine. Yeah. So anyway, he's 35 years old today. And so, yeah. And I have a 43-year-old son who I had, you know, gotten back when he was 8. He wasn't taken from me. I dropped him off because I didn't want him to see me that way. But I left him with his grandmother on his father's side in New Jersey. And so, yeah, I went to pick him up. So I came in these rooms and they said, you know, I got a sponsor. I was, you know, because of the, I've learned now, because I had no relationship with my mother, it was very difficult for me to trust a woman, you know. So, but I finally did that. I got the best sponsor ever. I wish I had cards for her, but can't do it like that anyway. But, you know, they baby stepped me. They understood me. And even when they said something I didn't like, you know, I didn't let them know I didn't like it, because I normally would have. But, you know, it was like my spirit was telling me, just sit down and, you know, glue yourself to that seat and just sit back and, you know, try to enjoy the ride. Keep it simple, you know, keep it simple, because I was all over the place. My brain didn't stop. I got right now, like you said, I got 7 months and 7 months and a half. And but my brain stopped. That train stopped and all the passengers got off, because in the book, it tells you that you hear about the asylums and all that Bill had to go through and all that stuff. Me too. You know, so I, you know, I went to outside doc therapist and all of that stuff. Thank God for the hope. You know, I'm happy that all these programs, you know, exist, that part. And so, yeah, so I'm doing a lot of work with myself. I enjoy doing the work on myself. I'm learning that about the control, you know, my go through the fourth and the fifth step, but, you know, but just admitting that first one, that I am powerless over this alcohol, and my life had become unmanageable, and I'm not trying to be perfect like I thought I needed to be for my mother. I was trying to be so perfect with her that drew over into my, you know, life. Like, I want to be perfect at everything. And then I found out, and then, you know, all the conditionings. How much time do I have left? Oh, 16. Okay.
15 seconds.
All the conditionings, I see it. all the conditionings, you know, had to be smashed. You know, all the religious stuff had to be smashed. And I was so glad about that, because it's like now the communication I have with my higher power is between me and my higher power. And, you know, and then I have this fellowship of people of all walks. And then they, you know, and Bill's story, it tells you from modem to modem. And I learned that that meant what's going on right now with these computers, you know, and they knew about that stuff in the 30s. So, yeah, this is just a beautiful thing, you know, that we all are here for one, you know, common denomination. And it's beautiful, you know, all nations, we're all, you know, doing this thing. So all you newcomers and anybody coming back, just, you know, give yourself a break and learn how to, you know, just this program will show you the way. You know, the door is wide open. You just got to be willing. You have to have the key of willingness. And, you know, fight through it, cry through it, call somebody, you know, and not try to do this thing by yourself. Because that's how I came. I was trying to do it myself. You know, I was telling help how to help me, and it don't work. So, but if you want a beautiful life, and yes, you know, they always say when I was growing up, the grass ain't greener on the other side. Yes, it is. It's greener over here on this side. Thanks for letting me share.